Views and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and contributors, and not necessarily those of WFSU Public Media.
What's the 411? You're tuned in to 411 Teen. 411 Teen is a weekly program for teens and parents and other interested folks. 411 Teen provides a forum to examine and discuss various issues and events that confront, intersect, and often interrupt our daily lives. Let's tap into the pulse of young folks. This edition of 411 Teen talks common sense. The common sense team consists of teens with diverse political affiliations, all in the IB program at Rickards High School. The panel seeks to analyze and evaluate national, state, and local politics of today while maintaining a substantive political dialogue. I'm Dr. Liz Hollyfield, and I welcome two of my regulars. I appreciate you being here. Hannah Quiros, she is a senior IB program in the computer science and politics.
Hi, thanks for having me.
And Ollie Saunders, she is also a senior. She is into foreign policy, history, and music.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Get it right. Yeah. Well, we got a lot we can talk about, okay? And today, now you have time to be able to discuss your full thoughts. Rickards High School is scheduled to receive some much-needed improvement to its campus. Kudos to Superintendent Rocky Hanna for building upgrade projects, which will begin this summer, and they're anticipated to be completed by August of 2021. Five of the buildings will be demolished and replaced with new construction, and there will be no need for the new Southside High School. What are your reactions and comments, since you both are Rickards students? You've been there, what, 4 years?
Yes.
We'll be graduating it soon. So what are your comments concerning the renovations versus the new school? How did you feel about that?
I think that, I don't know, one of the reasons why I think that Rickards really could have used a new school is not just like the physical aspect of we need a new school, but also just I think that morale at Rickards concerning the county education board is really low. I think that in general, Rickards students know that, especially, I can't really speak to the current administration because it hasn't been in for so long, but especially under Jackie Pons, I think a lot of Rickards students really felt devalued in comparisons to other high schools. And I think that having gained a new high school would have, like, shown us that the county really did value us and really valued our education. Okay. And the renovations are cool, and I realize that they solve a lot of logistical problems at Rickards, you know, of decrepit buildings and structural issues and things like that. But it's kind of like asking for an Xbox for your birthday and then, like, not getting the Xbox and getting something really cool. Like, it's still really cool. Mm-hmm. But you really wanted the Xbox. So it's like, so I don't know. I think people at Rickards are generally pretty apathetic about it. I'm graduating, so I'm not really going to get to benefit from it. Mm-hmm. And I don't know that it's as welcome as maybe lawmakers thought it would be.
Oh, really? Okay. All right. Yeah. What do you think?
I read a quote from Rocky Hanna regarding building why he wouldn't like to build a new Rickards High School or a new Southside High School, and saying that he looked forward to serving that community through renovating Rickards. And I thought, I know that he didn't mean it in, like, a bad way, but I thought that the use of that community was pretty pointed because, like, I feel like he doesn't view Rickards and just the South Side in general as a part of Leon County as much as he would view other parts of the county. And I recently sprained my ankle, and I had to use crutches for, like, a day. Not, like 2 or 3 days, and I've been walking around on a boot. So the stairs have been, like, a really pronounced issue for me.
I'm sure.
And, like, if you have a student in a wheelchair, like, you won't send them to Rickards because it's just nearly impossible to get to where you need to go. And even the elevators that we have in use don't provide easy access to every building, so you might have to go around the entire school to get to a certain building.
Excuse me. Now, will the corrections and the renovations, will they address that? Do you know?
I do not know, but I know that there was an attempt to purchase additional land, and there are complications that are going on with that. So additional land hasn't actually been purchased.
Mm-hmm.
So I worry that if we don't have more land to build on, then we might just end up, reinforcing that issue.
Mm-hmm.
I also...
I don't even understand that land thing, because they really could take that land by eminent domain, couldn't they?
I have no idea how property rights in Florida work, so
yeah,
maybe, But something I,
I mean, they would still pay for it, but, they could get the land if they really pursued it.
Maybe it's finding a lucrative deal for the land or something
mm-hmm.
like that.
I don't know. Something else that I saw that I liked was I saw that Curtis Richardson tweeted at Leon County Schools, and he said, will the plans contain anything about renovating the disgusting track and field facilities? And, Rickard's track and field has been doing pretty well lately, so I think they deserve nice facilities. And they
mm-hmm.
also, His daughter's very involved in that, and he's a family friend, so I liked that he was, targeting specific issues that his students had, his daughter had experienced
mm-hmm.
as a student of Rickard, so I thought that was cool. And Leon County Schools replied to him saying that that they would be willing to discuss further renovations. So I don't think the plan is solidified yet.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, that's good. Anything else particular happening at Rickards? Any projects? Anything that we need to know? I'm just asking. I don't know.
Yeah, something I think is cool that's slightly related to the demolition of the 400 building is that in our English class we're painting the walls because they're going to be destroyed.
They're going to be destroyed anyway. Huh?
Yeah. Something else that I heard that was really cool is I was. In the IB office, which is just a place in Rickards where, we have our IB coordinators mm-hmm. and we can talk to them about, issues that we're having with the program or to come to them for, extra help. When I was in there, two parents came in and they mentioned the Common Sense program and they mentioned hearing Rickards students. So to everyone that's listening, I think Rickards is really cool.
Rickards is the best.
Yeah.
Send all your children to Rickards.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, that's good.
It was really
that's
nice
positive.
To hear someone say, nice things about us. So
mm-hmm.
it was good. So.
Okay. Well, as we talk about Rickards, how do you feel about your teachers and your staff being armed with guns?
I would not trust certain teachers at Rickards with guns. Yeah. Sorry.
Oh, boy, you had no hesitation there.
I'm thinking of one in particular that I would not want to have a gun.
Yeah, I think it's an awful idea, and I can't believe that anyone would actually subscribe to it. So... I think that the Florida legislature has just been I thought that it was very just shady and kind of shameful that they decided to table a vote on banning semi-automatic rifles the day Stoneman Douglas students were arriving at the Capitol, and knowing that they would be hearing them out the very next day, they would be meeting with lawmakers to lobby for that legislation. I think the fact that they actually shut down discussion mm-hmm. of that legislation for vote was bad. I thought that that just came across to me as something that was very clearly underhanded. So I thought that, mm-hmm. I don't know, I'm kind of disappointed in them.
Yeah, I think the idea of arming teachers is very... I feel like I can feel the NRA watching me when I hear proposals like that, because it's only somebody... who is backed by the NRA or funded by the NRA would have this messed up common sense to say, let's fight guns with more guns. I saw a comparison that said, if another child is hitting your child with a stick, you don't give your child
a stick.
You take the stick away from the other child.
Yeah.
And I mean, I don't want to take everyone's guns or anything,
no.
but,
no,
You know, I've seen a ton of comparisons about how, even the NYPD success rate for targets is about 19%. And so if the most trained police officers in our entire country can't shoot an aggressor, there's pretty much no chance that teachers who maybe have a few classes can, really handle an aggressor like that. And I think it's just, it's a very weak move. And I think mm-hmm. that anyone with common sense should be able to look at it and say, that's a very weak move.
But you know what we say, common sense
isn't common.
That's right.
Yeah. That's true. I don't know. I think it should be common. I think that, I think also something that I saw here in Tallahassee was that somebody had a local lawmaker, I can't remember which one, had said that potentially that arming teachers could result in racist conflict de-escalation and potentially the use of those kinds of weapons. Like,
what?
Like if there was a threat that involved a black student.
The black student might get shot.
Yeah, basically. That if there was ever an example of a racist teacher or something, that it could, you know, result in, like, the stronger presence of weapons. And I saw the response by Rocky Hanna, and I know that I don't mean to be hypercritical, but he was criticizing, saying, we don't have teachers like that in our school system.
On.
I know teachers like that in our school system. Like,
come on, let's be
it's
real.
It's just ridiculous. Yeah. And it brought up a really good issue, I think, that must be discussed as well with proposals like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that wasn't something that I thought of, but extending police brutality to teachers that could be deputized is something that's very scary. And also I think it, like, deputizing school officials kind of makes school seem as if it's a war zone. So I think just for, like, the character of, like, whatever school that you would be going into, like, I think it would be something that's kind of damaging to the environment as a whole. But also just, like, as a measure to increase safety, it just makes no sense to me. Because I think that, like, let's say if there's, like, a school shooter on the loose and a teacher has a gun and they're looking for the shooter and there's a SWAT team that's breaking down a door and there's a teacher that's
with
armed.
The gun.
Yeah, I just don't understand how that wouldn't complicate the situation further. And I think, like,
and as a teacher, I don't think I would want to. Yeah. I wouldn't want to carry a gun.
And also not to mention if one of your students wants to commit a crime, teacher's out of the room. Oh, you know where his or her gun is located. Like,
and what if one of your students turned out to be the shooter?
Yeah.
Yeah.
How would you feel about blowing him or her away?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. My stepfather is a teacher, and he's also a former Marine. And Trump mentioned specifically, like,
those
we have
types.
Marines that are in our schools, and he thinks it's an awful idea.
Okay.
So I thought it was nice that I had a personal connection to someone that Trump would like to be involved in this program who thinks that it's something that we should reject. So
it just seems ridiculous to me. And that's just my opinion, that it wouldn't be conducive. It's almost like an oxymoron. Teachers and guns, it doesn't fit. We're going to take a brief break, but we'll get right back at you. Let's get Common Sense with the Common Sense team. This hour, I'm talking with students from Rickert's IB program, Hannah Kuros and Ali Saunders. Hazing has raised its ugly head again. It's often a ritualistic test, which may constitute harassment, abuse, humiliation, with requirements to perform meaningless tasks. As you know, we have problems with hazing at FAMU. We now are dealing with the hazing death that occurred over at FSU, and 9 students have been presented with plea options. How do you feel about this? What do you think?
I will admit that I'm not as familiar with this case because I looked a lot into the Penn State case earlier this summer, and in general, I think I'm not going to lie, Greek life just really freaks me out. Not only for hazing, which, you know, after being, you know, kind of interested in the Penn State case, also the history of sexual assault in fraternities is something that, you know, as a woman to me is not just concerning, but, like, very frightening. And knowing that I will have to deal with scenes like that in college is, you know, a very personal threat to me. I think that, although it was controversial, I think the decision to suspend Greek life at FSU was a very good decision. And I think it was maybe a little bit radical. I don't think it's really what people were prepared for. And I think, you know, it could have been maybe carried off a little bit better. Maybe like with, you know, maybe a more thorough investigation. But I think that overall hazing at fraternities and sororities people have tried to crack down on it, and it's just kept going. It's just kept persisting. So I think that, you know, universities like FSU and, you know, just overall big universities with big fraternity and sorority lives, I think that they really need to take a time out and assess the problems that are going on in their campus due to Greek life.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't think that Greek life itself is, you know, like, I think that a lot of parts of that culture, like, end up being toxic, but I don't think that, I think I can see why a student would want to join for built-in friends when, I don't plan on doing it personally, but I can see the appeal of having, you know, a built-in friend group and basically having access to just, like, a social scene, and you have, like, you have, it's, like, easier avenues for access to that. But, and I know most aren't actually philanthropic, but a lot of them present themselves that way. But I think that hazing is just a specialized form of bullying. And I think that, like, it's someone in a position of power taking advantage of someone that is, you know, like, looking up to them and someone that wants to be like them. So I think it's – which is the way that I think bullying typically works. So I don't know. Like, I think I understand why it has, like, its own name, but I generally just tend to view it within that context.
Okay.
And I've read about this case, and I know that Greek life – to a limited extent is restored at FSU. And it's a really ingrained part of their culture, so I don't think
– Not just FSU. It's a lot of places. Okay.
Yeah. So I think that fraternities will likely be, like, more cautious when they're coming back. But I think that eventually the culture will, like, you know, devolve, and then we'll be – I don't know if there'll be another death, but I think hazing will probably resume eventually. Mm-hmm. And with FEMU specifically, it happened with FSU as well, but I know that, like,
it happens all over.
Yeah.
I mean, and there are deaths all over.
Yeah.
I mean, so don't think, like, oh, it happened at FSU and it's the only one that happened in the whole year. No.
Yeah, no, I definitely don't think that, but I was just thinking about the ways that it reflects negatively upon a school because fraternities are, like, there are academic, like, fraternities, but it more so reflects upon, like, schools
social.
As social institutions, and that's not good for the school. And at FEMU, like, the fact that it happened within the Marching 100, which was, like, a really big part of, you know, FEMU's, like, just culture, and it was something that a lot of people that went to FEMU took a lot of pride in.
Right.
I think that it's, like, hazing is just generally, like, detrimental to the school's image as a whole, so they should be doing a lot more to combat it.
I also I think that part of the problem is there's just not a lot of comprehensive education on the negative effects of alcohol. And I mean that
excellent point.
Within universities themselves, obviously it's a problem. But I mean, like, from elementary school. Like, I know when I was little, they showed us, like, creepy videos about tobacco and things like that. And now my generation, except for, like, vaping. But otherwise, I think that, you know, it's pretty unusual to see kids in our generation, like, smoking cigarettes and things like that. I think that part of the issue with hazing is that a lot of these traditions, you know, they revive around alcohol. And a lot of times, you know, if you're a big, strong man, you get really drunk, you just get really drunk. Like, that's not really a life or death consequence.
Right.
But then you have cases like the ones at FSU and Penn State that are, like, they're deaths that are very closely related to the amount of alcohol. They really highlight the dangers that excessive drinking can bring to young people. So I think that in general, there just needs to be not necessarily blame, but more education about, you know, that alcohol is dangerous and not just a lot of fun. So
right. I you know, commend you for raising that, because I think that's a very important issue. The city Tallahassee has raised the issue again of consolidation of city and county law enforcement. So the Leon County Sheriff Department and the City of Tallahassee Police Department would possibly consolidate. But this comes up ever so often, okay? And I just wondered if you had any thoughts on consolidation.
I mean, just generally as, like, a concept, I think it's a good idea to, like, combine different organizations that are working together to achieve the same aim, because maybe then they can communicate better, and maybe then they can, you know, like, coordinate whatever their efforts are, especially if – I think community policing is a good idea. So if you have two organizations that come together as one, and they can pursue like positive policing tactics. I think that would be good. But I actually don't know much about the politics of how the two, you know, entities, like the way they interact mm-hmm. now. So
they seem to interact as two separate entities.
Yeah.
And that's what they are.
So we live outside of county lines, like mm-hmm. just barely. And, you know, one negative of consolidation would be that we'd have to pay more taxes, but which I know is kind of a straightforward answer. But one thing that would be nice is that all of my neighborhood is on, like, septic tanks, and mm-hmm. I know that people in the city, like, don't have to deal with that. And so we've had a lot of plumbing issues in the back year and past year and things like that. So that would be nice to have. And in general, I think it would just be nice to have access to city utilities, you know, city power and things like that, that, you know, they're not a major inconvenience. They're not, like, the bane of our existence. Mm-hmm. But it would be nice to have more invested improvements. We don't have need, like, sidewalks in our neighborhood. And I think if we were in the city, maybe they would be more of a vested interest in that because mm-hmm. I live on a major road. I think that, you know, taxes are important. I think that people would be resistant to having to pay more. But speaking from my personal experience, I think it would be nice to be more consolidated. And I think in general, with policing, I think that, yeah, I agree with Hannah. If you have two services that are doing the same thing, they should mm-hmm. be doing the same thing. They should be working together.
So, mm-hmm.
There's not really a need for, you know, county and city police officers if they can work more effectively together. So,
okay. Well, let's look at what's happening in the state of Florida. Okay. The Florida House sent the state their first gun control measure to Governor Rick Scott. And this is the first one in, I don't know, like 22 years or something, okay? It occurred after the Parkland shooting that killed 17. It creates a program that would arm some teachers, as we were talking about at Rickards. The bill would also include a 3-day waiting period for most gun purchases and raises the minimum age to 21 to purchase a gun. Okay. It gives police more authority to confiscate, okay, weapons in cases of threats against individuals and public safety. My question is, of course, how do you feel about gun control, about this gun control measure? Do you think it's enough? What else would you like to see, you know?
I think that for being like a gun control measure passed by the Florida legislature, I think that it was pretty wonderful. They honestly like very much exceeded my expectations of what the Florida legislature was willing to do.
Mm-hmm.
I went to the rally a couple weeks ago. The
Parkland
students,
okay,
yeah,
good,
and Hannah was there as well. A pretty constant like crowd shout was "vote them out, vote them out." Mm-hmm. And I think they heard, which is really nice. It's nice to have some positive affirmation that, that, you know, our voices are being heard. And, although, as we mentioned earlier, it has the aspect of arming school teachers, it is mostly voluntary. And, you know, I think that although I disagree with it, to have it in combination with other measures like raising the gun age to 21 and banning bump stocks and things like that, I think it was a good compromise.
Okay. So then what I hear you saying is generally you agree with it overall.
I mean, I would like more sweeping measures to be passed, but
that's a start.
For the way that, yeah, it's a start.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And we're just, you know, talking about the whole gun safety, gun control.
I think that this was a good reminder to me of what compromise looks like
mm-hmm.
because, like, I mean, I just thought I was reading a bit about what the bill includes and some parts of it I like the teacher, like the, I think it's called the Guardian
mm-hmm.
Act now. I think that, I think that's such an absolutely awful idea that, like, that's something that I don't think I would have been able to compromise on. Like, I personally think that, banning bump stocks is something that's common sense. I think they're devices that since they're devices that allow you to turn illegal weapons into illegal weapons
mm-hmm.
they seem like something
that's
that should obviously
yeah.
be considered illegal. So I think that a measure like that could have passed on its own within, you know, a separate bill. I think that increasing – I do think that it's kind of remarkable that, you know, in a state that's as Republican-dominated as Florida, we were able to increase wait times for gun purchases. And I think that I do think that upping the age to 21 is good, but I don't think that's going to – within the Stoneman Douglas shooting, that would have made a difference. But I think that generally it won't do an insane amount to curtail gun mm-hmm. violence.
Mm-hmm.
So I think those are, you know, positive components of this bill. But I personally think that the proposition of arming teachers is so dangerous and it's so ridiculous and it's so bad that I don't think that it's worth considering the bill as a whole. And I mm-hmm. like this is if this is what bipartisanship looks like, then that kind of sucks. So I don't know.
What else would you like to see? But you know, I say that to both of you. I mean, what would you like to see that didn't occur?
I think I would like to see a more comprehensive ban on semi-automatic weapons.
Okay.
I realize that that's a very unrealistic goal given the current political climate, but and I do believe that there should be exemptions for like ex-military or ex-police mm-hmm. people that, you know, would feel safer with that. But also, this is something that no one's talked about, and I guess it wouldn't really apply to the shooting, but I really truly believe that for gun license owners, it needs to be like a driver's license. Like, you need to have a year and like 40 hours of practice at a gun range with it.
Mm-hmm.
Because the whole reason why, you know, obviously being a teenager and going through that process myself, the whole reason why I need to go through that process is because, you know, we recognize that as a society, cars kill people.
Right.
But also, cars have another function. Guns are specifically meant to kill people.
Yeah.
So I think that we should, like, have really comprehensive classes and, you know, better access to gun range for people that want to learn. Because, you know, I think it makes sense for gun owners, too, because if you want to have a gun to defend yourself, that's great. So you should know how to defend yourself well. You should take those classes and really learn to operate a weapon in a way that is effective and safe.
Okay.
I think one thing that I guess I would disagree with you on is that I think I'm absolutely comfortable with advocating for a blanket ban of semi-automatic mm-hmm. weapons for civilian use, because I think there's genuinely no civilian purpose, like for, you know, owning those weapons. And even if ex-military officers feel more comfortable owning them, I think there have been with like military service, there's an association with PTSD. So I mm-hmm. think, and there have been a couple of people who perpetrated mass shootings that were ex-military. So I think that typically makes the nature of those shootings a lot more dangerous and deadly. So, even if it's a lot to want, like I definitely think that I'd be fine with a ban on semi-automatic weapons. And I think that I also something that I thought was good is that there are like many different databases that are currently used to catalog like people that are considered threats that shouldn't be able to own guns. And a measure that's, I think, like it's being proposed in Florida is making sure that those mechanisms are followed and enforced, and making sure that what we have in place to prevent people that would be considered, you know, mentally unstable from owning guns. I think that we should be putting more effort into making sure that those guidelines are adhered to, because I know with the Stoneman Douglas shooting that if like the perpetrator of that was someone who shouldn't have been able to purchase a gun. But I also think it would be good to address schools as being kind of toxic environments for certain students. And I think that like there's we don't really do a good job of dealing with like a culture of mental illness and stress within mm-hmm. high school. So I think that that's something that needs to be addressed too.
Following the Marjorie Stoneman Douglas shooting massacre, there have been a number of copycat threats. How do you think these should be handled?
I think they need to be handled seriously with at least detentions, if not arrests.
Mm-hmm.
I think that, you know, I mean, obviously school shooters, you know, obviously end up like Cruz imprisoned, or like many others, many kill themselves. But I think that we need to show people that threaten school shootings that, like, school shootings are not an issue to joke about. They're not an issue to take lightly or to implement as a joke. I think that, you know, especially if we had visible cases of potential people who had caused threats, I think it would really help to end kind of the existence of those threats.
I know that a student at Godby was arrested for threatening to, you know, shoot up his school. And I know, I think two other students were also arrested, like, with relation to threats. And I think that's a really good thing. And I know within, like, my freshman and sophomore year at Rickards, we had days where someone, like, threatened to do that at Rickards. And I remember, like, the second time it happened, like, making a joke with someone like, oh, it's a, you know, it's like a get out of school free day. We have an annual one each year. Yeah. And like we never really took threats like that seriously.
Mm-hmm.
But I think I view the potential of a school shooting like happening to me or people that I like, you know, love and know. Like I think I view it as a more concrete threat because like after attending the rally and after hearing the students who are doing like a fantastic job of advocating for stricter gun safety laws, but I think like hearing how personal their stories were mm-hmm. made me view the threat of a school shooting with more gravity. And I think that if anyone is threatening to, you know, like commit mass atrocity at their school, that should be taken really seriously as well.
You tuned in to 411 Teen. We're going to take a brief break, but we'll return momentarily.
Views and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and contributors and not necessarily those of WFSU Public Media.
What's the 411? You're tuned in to 411 Teen. I'm Dr. Liz Holyfield, and joining me, again, are students from Rickards High School in the IB program. Both of them are seniors, so they'll be leaving us. I'd like to say we have Hannah Kiros and Ollie Saunders. Glad to have you. Now it comes to the national, your president. Okay. Well, how would you assess the course of the presidency to this point? Oh, people cannot see your face. That was that was a great one, Ollie.
Not kindly. I think that by pretty much every measurable standard, he's not doing so great.
What? This is the best administration ever. We've accomplished more than
I saw something the other day about how he had a record-breaking turnover rate.
It's right. Like 43%, and that is absolutely insane. I think maybe it was Trevor Noah or something, but someone said, like, if I went to an Applebee's and there was a 43% turnover rate with the staff, I probably wouldn't go there anymore, you know, because it's indicative of something, like, very serious being wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I cut you off.
No. The economy has been, like, okay, which is cool.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I sold my college investment, so now I'm going to have at least enough for the first year.
Mm-hmm.
So thanks, Donald.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, otherwise, I can't think of anything that's gone right. And I feel like the economy was only because of Obama. So, I'm just pretty dissatisfied, but I feel pretty desensitized as well. I've focused more on reading, like, international news and more, like, cultural news than I have on, like, the Trump administration because it's just so completely depressing to me at this point.
Yeah. I just think it's like an absolute mess. And I think the reason why is because he takes a lot of pride in relying on his gut instinct,
mm-hmm.
which no one's gut is that good. No one's gut is sufficient enough to run a country.
No.
And I've listened to, like, you know, like sometimes I'll be listening to NPR or I'll be on, you know, I'll be watching CNN or I'll just be reading, like, the transcript of his speeches,
mm-hmm.
which are absolutely, like, insane to read because And, like, I still think that he is someone who is unfit to be president. And, like, that is reflected in, like, every outcome of every – like, anything that he tries to do. Because it – like, it, he just seems very unhinged whenever he speaks. He seems generally uninformed. He seems like he's willing to try and take any victory that he can grab onto, like Kim Jong-un offering to, you know, like, possibly negotiate his nuclear arsenal. Like, he – I know there was some discrepancy between him and the actual, like, White House, you know, correspondence, because he said, like, oh, this is the result of my tough policy. This is an extremely positive development. But we've seen this happen before, and I think the actual memo the White House released regarding that reflected, you know, that reality. And he just seems – he seems as if he's detached. Like, he – I think the country – like, I think the U.S. is still, you know, functioning. I'm really proud of the U.S. for managing to do that. But, like, he is just – like, he's very clearly not doing well, but the world hasn't fallen apart because of it.
Okay. Well, I think that – I'm sorry. I definitely lost my train of thought.
Okay. Well, when it comes back, just interject it, okay? As we look at President Trump, right now what's at the forefront is Stormy Daniels. I mean, that's where it's at. The whole saga of Stormy Daniels. This is something that allegedly happened before he was president, after the birth of his son. And what do you, how do you read this? I mean, it's.
I think, it's, you know, Trump likes to go on about the fake news and.
Oh, okay.
But
I don't think this is fake news.
I don't think it's fake news. And I think that if it had happened to Barack Obama, he would have been impeached.
Oh, yes.
I think
he would have. If Barack Obama had done half the stuff that he's done, he would have been impeached a long time ago.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's just – it really shows how much supporters of Trump, like, nothing fazes them. Like, I mean, I guess it really didn't faze me either because I, you know, I kind of always assumed.
Yeah.
But, you know, for all the Republicans that sit here and argue about, like, moral fortitude and, you know, we need to restore the old values of our society.
Family.
Is that really what you're supporting? And, you know, it's just like you think that he would at least gain some criticism over it. But I think, like, my reaction was, hey, well, at least you didn't, like, sexually assault her, you know? And, like, that shouldn't be the bar.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yeah, I feel bad. I don't feel bad for them, but I know, like, I guess I kind of sympathize with evangelicals that have to, like, constantly compromise and undermine their beliefs in order to support Donald Trump because, like, yeah, he's just, like, morally, he's a bad dude, you know? Like, even if you agree with him politically on, like, certain issues, he just, like, he's not a person of character. And that's, I don't think that's really a political assessment. I think it's like kind of, I think you can look at someone's actions and just decide, like, you know, like, probably not a good guy, cheated on his wife, like, a lot of times, you know, probably not a good move. Is dishonest a lot of the time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, probably not a great guy. but I also, like, I think something that's upsetting is, like, anything that the president does is news, and anything that the president does is going to be highly publicized.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, like, some family is going to be watching NBC Nightly News with Lester Holt, and they're going to be talking about Stormy Daniels, and a kid is going to ask, who is she, you know? And, like, it happens when he, like, uses curse words very prolifically, and it happens when – it's whenever he says anything inappropriate, which is, like, you know, very common.
All the time.
And, like, it's like, the president is I'm really desensitized to it. Like, I don't like him. I don't care. I just want the country to work. But it still matters because, he is the figurehead for the U.S. And mm-hmm. when he does something like this, like, it makes news. And it's just, like, it's a distraction from things that actually matter. And it's also just, like, uncomfortable for that mm-hmm. to be a thing that the American people have to discuss with regard to their president. So, yeah, I think it's bad but good for Stormy Daniels for pursuing it, you know? Like, that's cool.
Yeah. Did your thought come back?
No.
Okay. All right. Well, how do you read the Russian connection, if there is one? I know he says there is none, but it continues to surface. Do you see that as significant? Do you see it as anything we should pay attention to. Jared Kushner, for example, lost his security clearance. I guess it's been rescinded, yeah. The major questions about information that he may have shared with the Russians. And so where do you sit on this?
I'm kind of, I wouldn't say happy because, you know, if I was happy, none of this would have happened in the first place. But I am somewhat satisfied to see that there's been action taken against some of Trump's cronies. I think that especially removing Jared Kushner from high security clearance, like it sounds kind of tame compared to like Mueller and stuff who are getting, Manafort and them who are getting arrested. Yeah. But taking Jared Kushner away from top level security clearance, essentially it removes him from the White House equation, you know, even if he's not, you know, fired, he still is, he's definitely lost a lot.
Does he really have a job? I mean,
he's supposed to be in charge of many things, like a lot of foreign affairs, which is kind of scary.
Yeah,
because he doesn't have the experience.
Because neither does our Secretary of State, but here we are.
Right.
Jared Kushner, he's been essentially removed from the deliberation room. And I think that, I think that was very strong. And it was almost somewhat classy, I think, because it wasn't really a strong reprimand to the American people, but it was a very strong reprimand to Trump, I think. And I really appreciated that. So I'm glad that there's been some action on it. I think that the issue with Russians in the elections is very important, and I don't think that people should skim over it like we tend to because it's been going on for like a year.
It won't go away.
Yeah.
That's why it keeps coming back, I know.
Yeah, and I think this has been some of the most like comprehensive action on it. So I'm hoping for more action in the future, and I'm very happy with Robert Mueller right now.
Okay.
Yeah. I think Robert Mueller is being like a tough cookie. I think he's being good. And I also, it kind of reminds me of like a horror movie, like as if everyone's being picked off. and it's been fun to learn about like the Trump cronies that are being like, you know, being attacked this week for probably, you know, committing like mild treason. So I know like it's not really. He said a couple of things that seem like they're like really newsworthy and alarming, but Sam Nunberg, like making the rounds on national TV.
Yes.
I just thought, it was like something that the media had like a field day with because he allowed them to.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing that has annoyed me a little bit, and it's just due to the nature of the investigation, like it's something that's very important that we need to continue to discuss, but I don't think it's really productive to report detective work.
Mm-hmm.
So like I think, or not detective work, but speculation especially. So I think like cracking down on and like arresting and ordering subpoenas for different people that are probably implicated in this entire scandal is like a really positive thing to do, but I also sometimes do think that like it seems like a circus and like it's a really compelling good story, like there's a lot of scandal involved with it, and I think they'll eventually get to the president, but I don't think it's a good thing to sensationalize.
Mm-hmm. Well, they say the details will be released by the end of the week, but this
really?
Is the end. No, I'm not talking about Kushner, but I'm talking about this tariff that's coming.
Yeah.
But this is the end of the week.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. But, you know, he's the tariff on steel and aluminum. Any feelings about that? What do you think about that, the impact it may have? I guess they're considering excluding Canada and Mexico, and it's more so aimed at China.
I think it's completely ridiculous. I think that, I haven't really looked a lot into the situation with China, mm-hmm. but I know that the European Union was definitely thrown off, really off guard, and their president is now saying we are going to, you know, implement tariffs on other American goods. Like, I know that he mentioned, like, blue jeans or something,
mm-hmm.
things like that. And even the president of the EU was like, this is the most ridiculous thing we've had to do in a while. You know, it's just, there's no use for it, and I think it was another example of Trump just kind of doing things to cater to his base You know, I think it's very easy for people to be like, oh, tariffs, we need to protect our economy. And it just, I don't think it's going to end up working like that. And I think it's probably going to devalue a lot of things economically. I know, like, nothing about economics, but I know that changes like that tend to be pretty sweeping and tend to have, like a pretty negative effect. And I think I just am, you know, once again, really frustrated by the hypocrisy of the Trump administration, you know, saying that you're going to drain the swamp and then by making actions that are, you know, very specifically targeted to get you reelected, you know, becoming a part of the swamp. So,
yeah, I think this is really representative of like the tendency of Donald Trump to favor things that sound good rather than actually being good. Because, like, a large part of his base is, like, the auto industry. That's a big part of who got him elected.
Right.
But this tariff won't be good for them.
No.
But it seems as if it's, like, a really good move for economic nationalism. So it's something that he wants to implement. And I think that, like, even when presented with logic that suggests otherwise, if he thinks that something will fit with his brand or if he thinks that something will cater to his base, even without thinking it through, he'll seek to implement it and then he'll seek to defend it. So it seems really silly to me. Like, it's, I think, again, like, I'm not someone who knows very much about economics, but I have been reading up on this tariff because it seemed like he's trying to harken back to it reminded me a lot about coal, where he's trying to protect industries that he thinks seem to correlate with American values or like the Make America Great Again motto, because it's harkening back to like old things that we used to manufacture a lot of, like steel
to
and coal.
Steel, coal.
But even if it's even if it's impractical, he'll pursue it. So
okay. In these last few minutes, I'd just like to talk about a couple other things and get your reading on it. One is this opioid addiction. Opioid continues to be a major issue across the country. And it's not getting better at all. Florida kind of leads the nation with opioid deaths. And do you have any thoughts on it? What are your positions on the whole opioid addiction, or how we need, and you may not, I mean, but it's just something that, you know, it just seems to be ever present.
Yeah. I think that doctors could be a lot more conservative in prescribing pharmaceuticals. I know a decent amount about the influence that the pharmaceutical industry has on the medical industry, and it's just, overall, it's just really disgusting. In my opinion, it's just a form of, like, bribery in nicer terms. And I think, you know, a lot of people's first reaction would be, you know, to implement easier rehab or, you know, things like that. And I think that's important. But overall, I don't think that any short-term solution is going to work. We just have to start dismantling the relationship between these pharmaceutical companies and the doctors that prescribe opioids needlessly and excessively.
I read a bit about the policies that Arizona is implementing, and they have measures where they actually don't they don't impact people that have already been prescribed opioids. They don't lower their dosages, because if you do that, then they'll typically look for street drugs that sort of high. But for people that are going to be prescribed opioids, they're actually limiting what doctors can prescribe, which is good. Also, Time has released a lot of, like, really harrowing photos and phone calls that are related to overdose from opioids. So I think the nation has been doing a really good job of making this epidemic more visible. But I think there are still things that we could implement to make it better, especially making sure that making it very clear that people that overdose and call in, or someone who sees someone that's overdosed and calls in, like, even if they were taking the drug themselves, like, they won't be arrested for reporting those issues.
Yes, I was waiting to see if you all had any thoughts on that.
I think that's the right thing to do, because otherwise people will die because people are afraid to report, you know, their overdose.
Yeah, I know not really related to opioids, but one of the universities that I toured this summer, it was the only one that I went to that was really honest about drug and alcohol problems. And they said we require all students to take an education course, you know, whatever. But they said that, you know, if anyone had had a health issue related to alcohol or drug abuse, that they would be given amnesty. And yeah, I agree with Hannah. I think that's such a good idea because, you know, on their campus, it really contributed to, you know, people are still going to do alcohol and drugs, but it was not in excess. It was in, you know, a safe amount.
Thank you both. To my listening audience, thanks for your time and your ear. That's it for this edition of 411 Teen. Tune in next week, same time, same place, to get the 411 on 411 Teen. Teen was produced by Dr. Liz Holyfield. Technical assistance was provided by Ken Smith. If you would like to participate in 411 Teen or have suggestions for discussion topics, call 850-645-7200. 411 Teen archives are available as streaming audio and as downloads from WFSU.org. Check us out on Facebook.